You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, Governor Walker signed Act 10 into law 5 years ago today. We'll talk about the changes in Wisconsin politics since then and what lies ahead.
First, a lot of us have had an experience with healthcare where we have some kind of problem. We go to the clinic hoping for a solid answer, a diagnosis and a plan of action. And we leave with no answer, no diagnosis, no prescription. So what went wrong? Did the doctor miss something? Did we not describe our symptoms well enough?
But maybe nothing went wrong at all. Our next guest says uncertainty plays a big role in medicine, and most patients and providers don't know just how big those gray areas are. And that can lead to problems of overdiagnosis and overtreatment, or maybe steer people into potentially harmful behaviors because they think that all medical care is equally unreliable.
Dr. Stephen Hatch joins us now. He's a physician and an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. His new book is called Snowball in a Blizzard, a physician notes on uncertainty in medicine. Dr. Hatch, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Robin, Veronica.
So we've had so many medical advances in the last, I don't know, century or so. The medicines, high-tech imaging tools, large-scale studies. So why is there still so much uncertainty?
So what's happened is that over this past century, we've increased by quantum levels the amounts of precision that we have in making a diagnosis. And in many, many, many cases, that's allowed us to improve the accuracy and the certainty that we're actually diagnosing diseases for which we can offer treatments that are going to help. But one of the downsides that has been unrecognized or less recognized until about the past 10 or 15 years is that it doesn't increased precision is not the same thing as increased certainty. And so when we have a radiology test that can provide us exactly a pinpoint mechanism showing us that there's an abnormality, it doesn't necessarily mean that that abnormality is going to lead to any harm. And yet we often react to it as if it would.
And that leads to part of the problem with not thinking about this uncertainty, I guess, the idea that that cancer you just mentioned, that tumor we might have never detected in the past, and it might never have been a problem in the past. So now all of a sudden we're seeing this thing and maybe doing treatments which with problems of their own that might be unnecessary in the long run.
That's exactly right. And this has become a bigger and bigger problem as the resolution of our technology has improved so much more.
And there's also an idea out there, I think, that if I'm in as a patient and there's something going on, I'm going to feel like doing something is good. Doing nothing doesn't make any sense, when often in medicine, it seems like we're learning more and more the nothing option may be the better option.
That's right. And it was the source of the guidelines that had changed for instance, screening mammograms in women under the age of 50, which was a recommendation that started to change in 2009. There was really a very large controversy about that. And the idea behind those recommendations was exactly based on this kind of reasoning that you illustrate, which is sometimes doing more actually leads to harm rather than benefit.
And speaking of those of mammography, that's, I think, the origin of the title of your book, Snowball in a Blizzard. Can you talk about where that comes from?
Yeah, that's an old joke that radiologists have about the difficulties of interpreting mammograms. So the idea that even I held until I really started reading about the literature was that, you know, a woman went in for a screening mammogram and that if there was a cancerous tumor, it would just be there like it was sort of waving a red flag out in the distance, and a radiologist could very easily find it. But it turns out that being able to distinguish cancerous tissue from normal tissue is actually very difficult. And so the joke that radiologists have is that trying to find a tumor in a mammogram is akin to trying to find a snowball in a blizzard.
Talking to Dr. Stephen Hatch, author of the new book, Snowball in a Blizzard, A Physician's Notes on Uncertainty in Medicine. So, Dr. Hatch, how would you like to see doctors and patients, for that matter, think about uncertainty, recognize this uncertainty to end up with better outcomes?
I think the first thing that needs to happen is that they need to sort of incorporate the concept and incorporate the vocabulary of uncertainty. So uncertainty isn't just a binary, you're uncertain or you're not. There are gradations of uncertainty. There are some things that we actually are really very, very confident about in medicine and come as close to true certainty as possible. And then there are other treatments and diagnoses where we can be reasonably confident, but we're not 100% confident. Then there are some where we're much more speculative, and then there are some things where we really have no idea at all. And for those things, we should be very careful about proceeding forward. And then how you move from there is into a discussion about risks of taking action versus the risks of doing nothing, and the benefits of taking action versus the benefits of doing nothing.
I've heard this in the context of especially people, older people, maybe people that might have a 3, 4, 5 years in their life expectancy left. Then is there more harm in treating that tumor, say, that might never develop into anything worth the potential risk to that patient right now?
That's exactly right. And particularly in the field of cancer treatment, and I should point out I'm not a cancer specialist in this, I'm an infectious disease doctor. But when I've talked to oncologists about their work, one of the things that they try very carefully to do is to have a discussion with patients and their families about what the goals of treatment are. Because some people are going to want treatment no matter what at all costs, whereas other patients are going to want to understand what the potential downsides are and how much additional living that they can expect to do. And then other patients are going to be much more concerned about the quality of living that they're going to have, so they would want to avoid chemotherapy treatments that may be very toxic to them.
You mentioned a few moments ago that there are cases where we do have full-on certainty or close to, and you write, I like this, we could all benefit from this following advice, quoting here, exercise more, eat less, do not smoke. So these are things that are about as certain as we're going to get when it comes to health and medicine.
Yeah, and one of the things that I find continuously amazing whenever I watch healthcare news coverage is people talk about all sorts of miracle cures, and there's this diet and there's that diet. There's always a new diet that's around. And yet, really, if you want to boil things down into simple fundamentals, if we just ate less of whatever it is that we're eating, and if we just get out and exercise more and spend less time in the car or less time sitting around watching television, and then for the small subset of people, although it's not so small, of people who smoke, smoking really wreaks disproportionate havoc on a body. And for the most part, if you follow those three tenets, you're going to do pretty well in life.
Well, another worry that you have, I think, about uncertainty is the idea that if we find that medicine in some way is wrong or doesn't have all the answers in one sphere, we might end up rejecting medicine, healthcare as a whole, the idea being that nobody knows anything.
Yeah, I think this happens when people are promised more by a physician than the physician perhaps should. And then when the medical system or that physician fails to deliver, people feel so let down that they don't trust anything that the system has to offer. And I've encountered many patients who have stories to tell like that, where they don't trust any doctor once they've sort of experienced the sour taste of having thought that they knew what a diagnosis was, and then go to the next doctor and says, you know, well, that's not it at all.
Well, one area where this is really very relevant to you in the Northeast, very relevant to us here in Wisconsin, Lyme disease. And you talk about the alternative practices that have grown up surrounding Lyme disease, in part because of this confusion over what is meant by uncertainty. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that occupies an entire chapter in the book, because Lyme disease is a very complicated topic. Part of it results from the fact that the testing that we have for Lyme disease is not always good, and it varies from situation to situation. So, for instance, if somebody comes in acutely ill and it looks like they may have Lyme disease, for instance, it's the late summer and they're in Wisconsin and they've just come back from a backpacking trip where they've been exposed to ticks, and then they have a fever and a rash, that is very likely to be Lyme disease, and a negative test wouldn't necessarily rule that diagnosis out. But as time goes on and people develop symptoms of chronic fatigue, and it can last for months and months, if somebody has a negative Lyme test, that test gets increasingly more reliable. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is how there's been a group of people who have experienced chronic fatigue, and they are they have joined forces with doctors who believe that the cause of the chronic fatigue is an ongoing Lyme infection from which chronic antibiotics, potentially years in duration, are the right way to treat it. And mainstream physicians avoid this approach. And the reason why they avoid the approach is because we've done studies to find out whether or not those people would benefit from prolonged antibiotics. And it turns out that when we try to look at any benefits that can be had, none can be found.
We're talking to Dr. Stephen Hatch about his new book. It's called Snowball in a Blizzard, A Physician's Notes on Uncertainty in Medicine. He says uncertainty is a big part of healthcare, more than most patients and practitioners realize.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 with your questions and your experiences. Have you encountered this kind of uncertainty as a patient? Were you frustrated, or did you and the doctor work together to come up with a plan? If you work in the healthcare field, how does this play out for you? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation after looking the latest news with J. Carlisle Larson. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation with Dr. Stephen Hatch. His new book is called Snowball in a Blizzard, A Physician's Notes on Uncertainty in Medicine. He says there's more gray area in medicine than we might think, and we'll be better off as patients and as doctors if we pay attention to that uncertainty.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this kind of uncertainty in healthcare as a patient, as a family member, or as a healthcare provider yourself? Does it ever make you skeptical of healthcare in general? And what do you think of the way that the media covers medical issues? The reports on this is good for you, this isn't, and next week, baby, it's the other way around. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Dr. Hatch, I wanted to ask you about that media coverage issue. There's a lot of health reporting, a lot of reporting on research. You're not that happy with the way a lot of that is done.
Yeah, I think that one of the big problems about media reporting about health is that they over-sensationalize what medicine is actually capable of achieving. So they tend to play up studies that are highly speculative or really very early in the pipeline because it draws a lot of viewers. And then the other part that I think that they don't do very well is they don't give balance and context for how certain we can be. And just as you said in the introduction to this this part of the show, you noted that you know, one day you've got a set of guidelines that say the sun is coming up in the east, and then the next day the guidelines say, no, sorry, the sun is coming up in the west. And without the sense of, well, the benefits that they found, the guidelines say that the benefits are small but real, then if they do further studies and show that the benefits actually weren't found to be there, that's very different than saying, do this, and then 3 years later saying, no, sorry, don't do that.
And you focus in on the health benefits, real or imagined, of chocolate. Can you talk about how that's played out over the years?
Yeah, so chocolate, so first of all, I want to say I'm a big fan of chocolate. But whether or not chocolate has health benefits is something for which the media loves to report, and they love to talk about these observational studies, most of which are not especially well designed. And they have this tendency to not really explain the fine print, which shows that if you look at people consuming chocolate, that a very, very small number of them are shown to have, for instance, lower levels of heart failure in the people who eat dark chocolate. But they don't really go to the trouble of explaining how the studies were done and the size of the benefit. And you don't really need a PhD in statistics to be able to understand this stuff.
Well, and I wonder if this feeds kind of a health anxiety, if we are the sort of people who focus on these health stories and are trying to figure out what's going to be the healthiest way to live, and picking through all those studies, does this, in a way, make us more stressed out and ultimately less healthy?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. Which is why, as you noted earlier, like the way to live healthy is to eat modestly, it's to exercise, and to sort of enjoy life and not smoke cigarettes. And the way, if you read health news every day, and obviously it depends on the outlet, but I would get stressed out if I read that stuff every single day, and I wouldn't know what the right diet to have was, and I wouldn't know whether I should do the Mediterranean diet or the Sears diet or the Zone diet. And I think that all that does is it just creates a huge amount of anxiety, of this feeling like if you don't do it perfectly, you're going to get something wrong and you're going to have a downstream bad effect.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Mylea on the line in Madison. Hi.
Hi. So I was just calling because, I guess it's not more about health that I was calling about, more about pain, I had an incident where basically I was seeing an MD. It was my third child that I just had, and I was nursing her, and it was a constant battle on this infection that I was having, and I'm a fairly young person, and I guess I wanted to talk about, how do you manage pain, and although you may be healthy, but you may have chronic pain.
Mylea, what did your doctor recommend to you? What were you on for this?
I was on antibiotics, and for a long time. I was actually with a really renowned doctor that put me on lots of different types of antibiotics because I was battling this really bad infection.
Gotcha, Mylea. Thanks a lot. I just wanted to get a little more detail there. So a couple issues there, Dr. Hatch. One thing, the desire to do something for an infection or maybe a more vague condition often leads to antibiotic prescription, overprescription a lot of people are worried about these days.
Yeah, antibiotic overprescription is definitely a problem because it feeds that sense that if you come to the doctor and you think you have an infection, then you need to treat the infection and use the antibiotics. And sometimes, for instance, people come in with viral infections for which antibiotics aren't helpful. And then when we give people antibiotics, all we're doing is increasing the likelihood of bacterial resistance. As far as Mylea's point about pain the treatment of chronic pain, I think one of the important things that's important for doctors to be aware of is to really always validate the patient's sense of pain, even when we can't find a cause. So chronic pain is a little bit like chronic fatigue. We can only do so many studies before we're out of ideas of the things that we can fix, but just because we're out of studies doesn't make that pain any less real.
And this is a big question of what to prescribe and when, and concerns over addiction to forms of pain medication.
Yeah, I mean, the treatment of chronic pain is of course fraught with all kinds of problems because what treatments that we have for pain generally have addictive potential. And so I think that that's a very tough situation in medicine right now. And what my feeling is that what we can do on the medicine side of things is to make sure that we aren't dismissive of our patients and their pain and say, well, I did this x-ray and the x-ray didn't show anything, therefore you must be making it up. And I think doctors, not all doctors obviously, but sometimes doctors can send that message, sometimes overtly and then sometimes without even realizing it, and then patients feel very violated when that happens.
Mylea, thanks for that call. We're talking to Dr. Stephen Hatch. His new book is called Snowball in a Blizzard, A Physician's Notes on Uncertainty in Medicine. I wonder how much the answer is kind of a culture change here, because I'll say as a patient, I would love to walk in and have the authority figure definitively tell me what's wrong. And I think there's at least a stereotype of doctors in particular wanting to be that authority figure and tell people definitively what's wrong. Do we both need to step back and change the way we think about that?
My sense of medicine is that there should be an authority figure, but the authority figure is the patient and not the doctor. I think what a doctor should be is an advisor. I have a fair amount of technical knowledge, and I also have the experience of seeing patients on a daily basis, which allows me to provide context to lab reports and physical examinations and hearing a patient's history. That's what I bring to the table, but what the patient brings is their knowledge of themselves. And so what I try to do whenever I meet with patients, whether it's an inpatient setting when they're usually pretty sick or an outpatient setting where the problem's less urgent, is to try to find that area in which we can both bring our relative areas of expertise so that we can try to come up with a plan that really is directed by the patient. So I don't want to be the person to come in and say, do this, don't do that. But I want to be able to come in and say, the labs show this. My level of confidence that the diagnosis is this is pretty good. I think that a reasonable solution would be this, but there are upsides and there are downsides to that.
Let's bring on another caller. We've got Scott on the line in Appleton. Scott, hi.
Hey, how are you guys doing? One thing that for the past couple of years my family's had to deal with is doctors and trying to, doctors and concussions. And it basically comes down to, from what I found, if you don't end up with some minimal brain damage that can be seen on a scan, many of the doctors just try and blow it off and, well, you know, this, that, especially if it didn't occur while on the sports field.
Interesting, Scott. Thanks for the call. Dr. Hatch, concussions, going into the brain, evaluating that sort of thing, that seems like the grayest of all gray areas in some ways.
Yeah, so I think what Scott's touching on is the problems about interpreting a negative test. So when you have a test that finds nothing, does that mean that nothing is there, or does that mean that just we didn't find what we were looking for? It's a little bit like, you know, kind of looking for your keys under the lamppost in the parking lot, and you look there because that's where the light is. It doesn't mean that the keys aren't somewhere else.
Scott, thanks a lot for the call. Briefly, as you wrap up, Dr. Hatch, do you think people are taking this issue of uncertainty more seriously in the medical profession?
I think it's starting to become a recognized phenomenon as more large-scale studies have been done, particularly about the issues of overdiagnosis and overtreatment. There's been an increasing recognition that all the technology we have is not always beneficial. And there's been a reconsideration. We're only really at the beginning of that. And I think that patients need to be more aware of this issue in medicine so that they can begin having conversations with their doctors about whether or not they're really going to benefit from some new technology or even some existing technology.
We'll leave it there for now. Dr. Hatch, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Dr. Stephen Hatch, Assistant Professor of Medicine at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He's the author of the new book, Snowball in a Blizzard, A Physician's Notes on Uncertainty in Medicine.
Coming up next, it's news from NPR and WPR, and then we'll look at the changing political landscape in Wisconsin 5 years after Act 10 was signed into law. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.